Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
When I whisper like this, this means it's parenthetical. I just wanted to make that clear from the get-go.
Okay, we're so young. This was supposed to be fun. It was supposed to be carefree.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 20, Separate Ways, Worlds Apart. And now here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
If you got anything you want said parenthetically during this episode, you just let me know and I will do it for you.
I don't like that.
The face that was being made during the parenthetical looked like he had sat on a cactus. Brilliant. No notes.
Hey, Sarah.
Complimentary. Hi.
Hey, listeners. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's coming up on Patreon. This Friday, May 1st, May Day, it's Again With This 286. Let's watch Chad Michael Murray in Freaky Friday. That is on Disney Plus. We'll link it in the show notes. This is, of course, the one with Lindsay Lohan, not the one from the 70s, whatever that one was. There's no Tuesday Weld involved. He was probably not born yet. And just to give you a little extra tease, because this is a pivotal Dawson's Creek episode for Chad Michael Murray, this is actually the first of a 2-Friday event. Yes, we are going to be talking about him in Freakier Friday next Friday. So look ahead for that. Get excited now. The best movie of 2025. That's right. I said it.
I don't totally disagree. And we are not making you endure his turn as Ted Bundy yet. You're welcome. But speaking of May Day, this Thursday, April 30th, we will be bringing you the April Again With Them. That is our coverage of Jenny and Tori's Wretched Recap Podcast, 90210 OMG. That is for our high rollers, $5 a month and up. And we urge you to get on board and, ergo, never to listen to them. Please let us do it and report back to you. That literally is what the money is for. Mm-hmm. Bumping up those pledges is a sanity saving measure for you, not us.
Yeah.
But
seriously.
Again, we live to serve. Check us out.
We do. And an extra tease on that as well. We are recording this episode well before the end of the month. So all I have heard so far is the first of April's episodes. It is an interview with Angel Boris Reed, who played Emma, the red-bobbed vixen who, quote, seduced, unquote, Brandon at the Beverly Beat. And does Tori make it weird by bringing up shit from their past? She sure does. And
let us
tell you about that. For God's sake, don't listen to them. One other thing before we move into this episode of Dawson's Creek. It's almost that time. We are drawing close to the end of the penultimate season of Dawson's Creek. And if you have been with us for a long time, you know that means it's time for a call-in show where you get to tell us what you think we should cover on the show once we are all out of Dawson's Creekses.
Battle beyond the stars!
I don't know what that is, but sir, whoever you are, you can call in 210-767-2237. If you are driving and we're not able to write that down, don't worry. Just go to againwiththispodcast.com. It is right there under info or about. Let me just confirm. Sorry, I'll say that again. I'll say it properly.
All episodes of Father Ted.
That's not your parenthetical voice, Dave.
That's an interesting pitch. We have a couple of shows that we've sort of talked about a little bit. I have a shelf of DVDs just in case we go one way or another, but we do want to hear from you. So 210-767-2237. We're going to be taping that toward the end of May. So please get your calls in by May 20th if you want to be part of that episode. Yes.
How funny would it be if everybody voted and you guys had to do like a Star Trek podcast or something like that?
I wouldn't mind. I'd be surprised.
No, that would be all right.
But that would be okay.
Okay.
You could call us about anything you want, but yes, we do want to hear from you with your ideas. Mm-hmm. We actually, I think, did not anticipate that us returning to Dawson's Creek, lo these many years later, would be as popular and compelling as it proved to be. So who knows if this ends up being the Father Ted again podcast, Ted or Alive. I don't know. We'll see. Call us.
Yes, you can also text us at that number as well, and we can read those aloud if you are too shy to share your voice. But, you know, it is an audio podcast. Calls are preferred if you can manage it. Mm-hmm. Info on all of that and more, againwiththispodcast.com. And if you want to join the club, againwiththispodcast.com/club. All right, finally, the episode. Sarah, let's start with our C-plot. Oliver's career prospects are threatened by Oliver's personality. Dawson, visibly stressed, although not as visibly as David Silver normally is on his show, is packing a bag and trying to review the game plan for his and Oliver's rescheduled meeting with the one and only agent who is interested in them. Oliver cuts him off to say Dawson should let him do most of the talking because Dawson is dry and Oliver shines in meetings. Dawson is, I think we all are, surprised to learn that Oliver's had other meetings and Oliver, not as best as he should be, admits he means practice meetings with family members. Oh, great. Dawson re-exposits how this could be the only chance they get to turn what, as far as we know, is a still untitled movie into anything. But Oliver is, as usual, way too cocky relative to his actual accomplishments or apparent talent. Clip two.
We got no worries here. You're a terrific director, and I'm a phenomenal writer. After today, when someone asks us, do you two gentlemen have representation? We can say, why, yes. Yes, we do.
Plenty of people are talented, Oliver. Not all of them have agents.
That's true. You know why? Because it's all about presentation. We go in there looking like $1 million. Who's going to turn us down? Huh?
I know I'm going to regret asking this, but how exactly do we do that?
Okay. You seen the movie Rain Man?
Yeah.
Well, remember when they're coming down the escalator in the Vegas, right?
This isn't going where I think it's going, is it?
That was a kick-ass entrance!
Oliver, no.
How great would that go over? We'd look like the ultimate team.
We're not gonna go to this meeting wearing matching suits.
How about just matching shirts, huh? Come on, we'd look like Siegfried and Roy! Aw.
Are those the shirts you're gonna wear? Because, interesting.
I mean, it would be an attention getter, and perhaps it would mean Oliver took off some of the 17 pounds of hemp necklaces from Urban Outfitters that he always seems to be wearing, but that plan is not executed, regrettably.
It is not. I think Charlie is the hemp one. Oliver's the one who has like dog collar looking metal ones, and perhaps choke chain would be a good idea before going into this meeting. I'm just saying. But speaking of matching shirts, throughmethods.com, if you want to twin with your friends who also love this podcast, because there's some new stuff up there, you gotta check it out.
You sure do.
When we see Oliver and Dawson next, they are waiting in the agent's outer office. Oliver casually flipping through a Hollywood Reporter while Dawson tensely says, this is their for real last chance to go over a new strategy for the meeting. Oliver scoffs that the agent is going to keep them waiting for at least another half hour as a power move. The receptionist catches Oliver's eye and kind of smirks, which Oliver decides is her checking him out. Dawson looks up and says she's not even looking at him, and no, Oliver should not ask her out. Oliver agrees that the long distance thing would keep them from working out. Dawson's like, exactly, that's it, which just changes Oliver's mind back again if she's willing to go for it. Dawson gives Oliver a side eye like it's only now occurring to him what he has yoked his career to, and then we get this. Clip three.
Yes. Pulp Fiction 2.
No.
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 No, no, no.
No. Speaking of no, the meeting. The agent, Andrew Waller, is played by, hey, it's that Jack Plotnick. You can see him in the visual aids if the name doesn't mean anything because you have seen his face.
Mm-hmm.
He starts out very warm, and then Oliver pisses all over the good mood. Clip four.
Thirst for vengeance? You weren't responsible for that, were you?
We packaged it, yes.
We were just talking about that movie on the way down, actually. It was a really interesting choice to have him direct that movie.
Yeah, but that script? Bazooka Comics have more depth than that.
Must be the writer.
Yeah. Go for it. We both are, actually, which is kind of what makes us such a good team, because Oliver, in addition to knowing what he likes, also has the ability to think big in almost operatic terms.
And you rein him in.
Right. Yeah. As a director, I've learned that sometimes you just have to think in terms of what's logistically possible, otherwise you won't get anything on film.
And you did. Something far beyond the usual student film, but believe me, I've seen a lot of them.
Okay, I mean, credit to Dawson for giving Oliver's stank attitude a positive spin and getting things back on track. Like, the Dawson of yesteryear would be more in an Oliver mode, I feel like. And this is showing a lot of growth for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think he must have been dimly aware on the way down there that he was going to have to act as this check and balance to mm-hmm. whatever chaotic evil Oliver planned to perpetrate during the meeting. So,
yep.
Yeah, but especially for Dawson, you would not expect this level of like even keel, but good for him.
Yep. Unfortunately, the meeting does not stay on the track. Clip 5.
So what I wanted to discuss with you, Jen, can I interrupt for a moment?
Sure. Because we don't have a lot of time. Actually, we have a couple more meetings today. Mostly production companies, more on the edgier indie side. Not that we're opposed to, you know, compromising our artistic integrity to earn a couple bucks. The point is, what is it that Hollywood is always looking for, but never seems to find enough of?
Is this a riddle or something?
Don't worry, I got this. Young talent! And that, my friend, is what me and my partner are. We are young and we're talented.
I would agree on both counts, which is why I asked you to come meet with me.
So let's cut to the chase, shall we?
Or we could just listen to what the man has to say.
Where does that term come from? Anyway, cut to the chase. It's a Hollywood term. No one wanted to just sit through boring hours of narrative. They wanted to get right to the exciting chase sequence. Isn't that right?
I believe it is, yeah.
Thus, cut to the chase.
Okay, that ends another fascinating edition of Anatomy of a Phrase.
I mean, bitchy Dawson isn't always my favorite, but when it's deployed for good, I don't hate it. Also, credit to What's-Its, Bridges, for just being so, this is so awkward. Mm-hmm. But it's not, like, quite over the top. It's just, I'm cringing, basically. So,
yeah.
Well done.
It's so embarrassing that the discussion of cut to the chase is, like, 10 times as long as it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Never mind it being inappropriate to do in a meeting when the person you're meeting with is about to get to it, and then you cut them off to say, let's get to it. Anyway, again, witty writing. Judging by his expression, Dawson is still possibly hopeful for a good outcome. Unfortunately, that is not in the cards for him today. Clip 6.
Is he okay?
Depends what you mean by that term.
I'm just sort of wondering if he's on some kind of drugs.
No, he's just eccentric. Look, Mr. Wallet, we don't mean to waste your time.
Well, in that case, Oliver, Dawson, it's nice to meet you both. Thanks for stopping by. We'll be in touch.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So you're saying there's a chance. Oh, another perfect performance. And he's just like, oh boy, well, nope.
Yeah. Goodbye forever. We're changing our number, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Walking back to the Jeep, Dawson begs Oliver for some kind of explanation of what he just did in there. Oliver says maybe he got a little carried away, but he was just trying to avoid sad, terrifying silences. Like after he told Waller his movie sucked, Dawson suggests, and Oliver agrees that he could have been more diplomatic, but clip 7.
Next time, I promise the full Hollywood brown nose treatment.
What next time? Oliver, that guy's never going to meet with us again.
Okay, Dawson. A little perspective, please. Andrew Waller is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole world of agencies out there just waiting to be introduced to the blinding brilliance of Churchick and Leary.
Sure.
Waiting extremely patiently, I'll wager.
Yeah. And if this makes you think the reason Oliver was such an asshole to Waller is that he had a secret other lead in his back pocket that he's about to surprise Dawson with, no, he's just thinking about any agencies they didn't already cold contact and get nothing back from, as Dawson reminds him. They hit up like 60. But Oliver is undeterred. Clip 8.
Our film kicks serious ass, and the next one's going to be even better. We are a great team, man. We're like the Coen brothers or the Hughes brothers or the Wachowskis.
Except we're not brothers.
Neither are the Wachowskis.
Well, they didn't know that then, but yes.
Well, they may have. I listened to a podcast where one of the co-hosts is a trans woman, and occasionally, because of the subject matter, she talks about her childhood, and her joke about that is like, I went to an all-boys school, or so they thought, which I always think is pretty good. Anyway, yeah, back to the scene, clip 9.
We made one film together, Oliver, one film. And after today, I'm starting to think this whole partnership is just a bad idea.
What? Do you want to end the partnership?
No.
Yes.
I just... Look. I didn't walk into this meeting expecting it to be some miracle that would change my life forever, okay? But I wanted it to go better than that.
Yeah. So did I. But it didn't. You know, so I figured let's just... go back to making movies, and then when we get another chance...
Another chance? Oliver, this was our chance! That was our chance, and we blew it!
Okay! Excuse me for trying to be a little optimistic about our future, you know?
Oh, wait a minute. What was that you said about us not having a future?
I'm trying to be realistic here, and you're just being naive.
I don't get why Dawson doesn't want to end the partnership. Like, there's been zero evidence in this scene that Oliver understands the reason the meeting was bad is because he fucked it. You know, like,
yeah,
this is the issue. Like, if he's going to keep being like this, he's going to keep being like this. And if he doesn't show some kind of understanding of like, oh, okay, this was the wrong approach, I won't do it again. I don't know what future Dawson thinks they're going to have.
And it's not like the filmmaking process, like, Oliver just is this. We saw it in the previous episode where he's like, so I invited this film critic, like, okay, either you can live with this chaotic evil or you can't, and I don't think Dawson can. I also would like to know, like, the meeting was during the day, but then I think they're having this argument like at night.
It's after dark.
So it's, yeah, so it's like, once again, I am beseeching you, when you call our phone number, come up with the name for this thing, which I started bugging me when, like, Brenda, Dylan, and Jim Walsh sat in silence all the way from the Mexican border back to Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And then started fighting about shit coming into the kitchen. What is the name of that where everyone just sits quietly in the car and waits for a camera to show up until they to start arguing? So pause.
Yeah.
Dunderlude. I can't come up with a good term that explains what it is. So we're counting on you guys. Hit it.
Yeah, this came up in our timeline, the most recent episode of Rooster, where the Phil Dunster character, his girlfriend gets back from a bunch of job interviews in New York, and he only asks her when they get back to her apartment, like, so how did they go? And her roommate is like, what did you talk about in the car? So at least they were like hanging a lampshade on it. Nice. Which I appreciated.
Like, do you not have texting capabilities? Please.
Yeah.
Talk to each other.
In that instance, it's because he's a bad boyfriend and he wants to break up, but she's pregnant, so it's awkward. But, like, you know, that is supposed to underscore that they are incompatible. And, I mean, it should be this, too. Like, as if Dawson was on the street, like, no, 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 we're not talking about it now, surrounded by all these New York strangers. Wait until we get into the completely empty parking garage. Then we can really hash it out.
Also, where is that parking garage? Please tell me so I can park there.
Anyway, Oliver shoots back that naive is Dawson driving to Florida to try to fulfill his romantic destiny, which, by the way, was Oliver's idea anyway. Dawson correctly says this is different, and Oliver agrees, picking up his bag and saying he's going to take the train back. Good idea. Dawson should have told him to do that before they left Waller's lobby. And also, that whole thing where Oliver was going to ask Jen out and then gave her that look and she looked like she was all Twitter-pated. Nothing has come of that. That was two episodes ago. So I don't know why they even did it in the first place.
I don't either.
Speaking of Waller's lobby, that's where we see Dawson next, as Waller comes down the stairs and sees Dawson there waiting for him. And a few notes. A, this scene happens after one where Joey goes to see Charlie playing at a club. So it's probably after 11 p.m., if not later. And Waller is just leaving his office now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was making a lot of calls to the West Coast. Who knows?
The whole place is also decorated like a Pier 1 exploded in Hilton Head. So, yeah, that's not what a New York film agent's office or building looks like, but go off.
Yeah, it's not a Manhattan office building lobby. Like, he's walking down stairs with a wooden banister. Like, no.
Yeah.
Maybe an apartment
Grams
building?
Does know you're in her giant house? Because that's what it looks like you're doing.
Yeah, he's going down the back stairs. Anyway, Waller asks if Dawson knows what time it is, but Dawson stopped checking his watch hours ago. Clip 10.
You're crazier than the other one, aren't you?
Maybe even crazier, because I've got something to say. I'm not going to leave until I say it.
I'm listening.
Give us another chance.
Is that it? That's what you wanted to say? You waited 5 hours to ask for another chance.
Look, I know we might not seem like we're the greatest risk right now, but that's what you do, right? You take chances on people. You bet on which ones are going to be a success. I'm telling you, bet on us. I want this like I've never wanted anything. It's been the hardest year of my life, and I've screwed a lot of things up, but I'm not going to screw this up.
What are you? You're like 19, 20?
19.
And life really feels this desperate.
Life is desperate. Life is chances that you never get back, which is why I've been waiting here for so long. It's why I'm not going to leave until you at least agree to take a look at our next project.
You're not faking it, are you? The desperation, the anguish, the youthful torment.
I wish I was.
Well, don't. It's good stuff. All that teenage crap. It's one thing you can't fake as you get older. Very marketable, too.
Sure. Uh-huh. Why not? Absolutely.
Yes, sure. That's a meta comment on something.
Also, at the beginning of that clip, one of them screwed up because the lines are, you're crazier than the other one. And Dawson says, maybe even crazier. So was it supposed to be, you're as crazy as the other one? Or was Vanderbeek improvising, maybe even crazier? Because,
yeah.
Anyway.
So call security, guy. Come on.
Yeah. I can't imagine Dawson is the first aspiring showbiz person to hang out in the office waiting for him to come down the stairs.
Well, yeah, which is why you lock the outer door and have a guy at a desk with a walkie-talkie.
We do see a guy in the background not doing his job. Anyway.
It's Jack, who we otherwise don't see.
That's true. Don't see Jen either. Waller tells Dawson to send him his or their, I guess, next project and that he will put out some feelers about the previous one. As long as Dawson understands he can't promise anything, they have a deal and they shake on it. And I guess that's it. And when Joey comes by the next night to see how the meeting went, Dawson has the pleasure of telling her he thinks he has an agent. Clip 11.
Congratulations. It's a dream come true.
Almost.
That's as close as we get to any kind of wistfulness about him coming all the way to Florida to declare himself again and then just not doing it. Like, there's so many stories really weirdly being told at the end of the season.
Yeah. Like, and there is another, it's not just 22. I think we have 23 episodes in the season. They're taking four fucking ever to move certain chess pieces around. And then others, they're just like flicking into the garbage. Like, I think it was pretty clear to me, at least, although tonally they made a hash of it, that while they were in Florida, Jack had a drinking, like problematic drinking issue and possibly some self-destructive ideations. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Mm-hmm. And then Dawson fishes him out of the pool and puts 20 layers on him in Florida in April. And then he's just not in this episode. So we're just not going to deal with that. So that Oliver can Oliver in a way that would get him removed from the premises and barred permanently from that building.
Yeah.
Sure.
All they do now, Dawson and Joey, is go for pizza, but I still don't like the looming hint that they're moving towards each other again.
They lost another opportunity because the last shot of the episode is them heading off for pizza together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate the current vibe between them. I just wish they hadn't gone there with Dawson being like, but let's soulmate again.
Yeah. Ugh.
But there was a similar shot, I think, in the first season where they're just walking off together and they're like kicking each other in the butt.
Oh, that was last season. Yeah, last season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Which I remember really liking because it was like, oh, actually acting like people who have been friends forever and known each other since they were in diapers.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. I like this vibe.
Yeah.
And I really wanted them to do that again in this scene. But I think everyone on the show now just is acting like high school didn't happen. And we're doing this college soap. And it's bums me out, kind of.
Well, the kicking scene also happened after she held back telling him that she had had sex with Pacey.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. It was that whole thing.
Yeah, I hated that also. Okay, well, anyway, moving on.
The B plot. New management threatens to collapse civilization as we know it. Har har, because that's what the restaurant's called. We open on Audrey and Pacey walking into the restaurant for their shifts. Audrey expositing about a memo that was delivered with her last paychecks, announcing that the restaurant was under new management. Pacey doesn't believe that Danny could be gone since they spoke right before Danny went on vacation and Danny didn't say anything about leaving. Audrey reminds Pacey about Danny telling him that one day Pacey would look up and he would be gone. Apparently that day is today because the restaurant is empty and Audrey has been given to understand that a conglomerate has bought civilization to turn it into a chain and it's closed for lunch today because there's a staff meeting with the new manager at 3. Pacey is sure there's a logical explanation for all of this and Audrey predicts probably not one they're going to like and she seems to be right when everyone's milling around waiting for the meeting to start. Audrey announcing to Pacey that if Flair is involved in the new regime, she is quitting. Good call. Pacey says he hasn't been able to get hold of Danny and that his outgoing answering machine message said something about him being in New York. Oh, good. Letting everyone know, come and rob my apartment. I'm not there. But anyway, before long, a woman calls for attention and introduces herself as the new manager, Alex Pearl. She is played by Sherilyn Fenn from Twin Peaks, and you can tell she's bad news because her hair is in a severe ponytail and she is wearing a very unflattering beige satin blouse. She confirms that the former owners and chef have already moved on to new prospects. Pacey, as we would expect, is constitutionally unable to keep his mouth shut for 3 minutes in a row and starts in defending Danny as if he's there to appreciate it, when in fact, he fucked off without giving his protege advance warning about any of this. Anyway, here is how Pacey ingratiates himself to Alex, clip two.
They built something here so successful that the new owners are looking to expand it into a series of restaurants.
You mean a chain?
More like multiple locations with similar atmosphere and menu. You have a problem with that?
No. I just have a little problem with people being forced out of things that they built with their own two hands.
Well, I can assure you that nobody walked away from this deal poverty-stricken. After all, that is why people get into the restaurant business.
Why, to make money?
That's why we're all here, isn't it? Now, as manager of this location, I'll be instituting a lot of changes, not only in policy, but also in staff. Invariably, some of you will be let go.
Some of us?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but have you been elected to speak for the entire staff?
Oh, no, I apologize. I didn't realize that we had to be allowed to speak.
Just quit, fucko. Jesus. This story is so fucking boring.
Yes, it is.
None of it works at all.
Yeah, you're 19. You live in Boston. There are other restaurants. Like, just go somewhere else. Wait for Danny to come back. Ask him to recommend you some other place. Move on.
Yeah.
But he stays, as Alex says. She will be speaking to each of them over the course of the night about their employment, and she expects them to use any free time they may have to review the employee handbook. Yikes. And yes, some of them will be let go, but it's not personal. When Alex stops, Audrey says, Alex is the devil, and Pacey, clip 13.
Relax, will you? We don't know how bad this is yet.
You kind of do. It's pretty obvious.
The chef is not there, obviously took a buyout, and yet they're going to be open for dinner service the same day. Run away. Don't stop for your last paycheck. Just get out.
I mean, the fact that this woman is like, didn't we all get into the restaurant business and make money? Like, no. It's famously extremely insolvent.
Yeah. Like, I think Mr. Rayo maybe worked it out with some merchandising. Everybody else is just trying not to lose their minds.
Yep. Pacey, better hope it doesn't get bad, Audrey says. He just made a terrible first impression. And that's when Alex comes over, introduces herself again, and apologizes if she seemed harsh. She welcomes employee feedback, she claims, and Pacey is first on her list for a one-on-one. And in Alex's office, Pacey reminds us how little job experience he actually has by looming over Alex when she sits behind her desk, guessing that he doesn't like authority, which he confirms. She assumes he liked Danny, and Pacey says Danny taught him everything he knows, including his attitude, he confirms when she asks. When he finally sits, he assumes he's about to lose his job, but it's the opposite. She's promoting him to run the kitchen until she can hire someone permanent, so I guess she's trying to get all the other kitchen staffers to quit rather than work for a punk kid who's only had this job for 8 months, during which time he has quit and come back twice.
Yeah, we have also no evidence that he learned how to make risotto. Mm-mm. We have no evidence that he knows how to source ingredients.
Nope.
I love Pacey too. He is 19. There is more to running a kitchen than just having successfully learned to dice a mushroom.
Yeah. And be the favorite of the chef who's now gone.
Mm-hmm.
Pacey at least has the sense to ask if she shouldn't give that responsibility to someone with more experience, because yes, she should. But when she asks if he's saying he doesn't want it, he quickly says he does and gives her a big smile. She likes his overconfidence. So, you know, this is right around where you can tell, okay, Alex is trying to fuck a teenager. Got it. And then Pacey, the head chef, is salting tomato slices when Audrey droops in from her one-on-one with Alex. Pacey chirps that it wasn't so bad, right? And Audrey says it was worse. Pacey sure everything's going to be fine after the adjustment period. Audrey tells him he can tell her how it works out because she's no longer an employee. And Pacey still doesn't get it, asking if she quit when she says she was fired. He guarantees he will get her job back by the next day, hugging her in the middle of the kitchen instead of getting ready for dinner service, which is on when we return. Alex has just told a server to comp dessert for a table that waited too long when she bursts into the kitchen to complain about the pace. Pacey tells her she is standing in a high traffic area, but she wants to know if they're ordering too many lobsters. Pacey says they are, but Danny has a deal with the vendor. To waste food, I guess. I don't know what that deal is. And She reminds him of what she said about changes. Pacey decides this is the right time to bring up one of the waitresses she fired. Alex fired a bunch of them. So Pacey says this one is young and blonde. And Alex jokes that it's her favorite combination, then asks if Pacey has a special relationship with her. And Pacey sheepishly admits that Audrey is his girlfriend right before another chef bumps Alex into Pacey's arms, where she lingers just a moment too long before telling Pacey they can discuss it later. But apparently later is going to be another day, because when we see Pacey next, he is joining Audrey and Joey moments after Charlie's band finishes their set. More on them in the A plot. Admitting when Audrey asks that he didn't get her job back yet, Joey asks about the new manager. Audrey says she looks fine for an older woman, and Pacey's like, she's not that old. Audrey says she's older than they are and younger than Graham's, and leaves it there. So I guess when Pacey brought up sleeping with a teacher a few episodes ago as something he had firsthand knowledge of, Audrey wasn't paying attention and never asked any follow-up questions, because She's not making any connections to Tamara that we can guess.
No.
The next night, after close at the restaurant, Pacey respectfully takes his baseball cap off before heading into Alex's office to revive the discussion about Audrey. After a reminder, Alex says, last hired, first fired. Pacey guesses she's going to be managing by adage, which doesn't seem like the way to get what he wants, but she just chuckles that she picked it up in business school. Speaking of which, she asks him to help her hang her framed diploma, nerd, then changes her mind because it's bad luck to move in somewhere you might not stay, and every job is temporary in this economy. Pacey's like, yeah, about that, Audrey? And Alex remembers that she's his girlfriend and asks how old he is. When he says 19, surprising Alex, who thought he seemed older, she says he's young to be settling down and that there are no more adorable single men in this town. Pacey tries to redirect her, and as she fondles his chef's jacket, she says they might be able to work something out. After all, they both want the same thing, and then pounces on him, kissing him. Charitably, Pacey says they must have gotten their wires crossed. Alex doesn't think it felt that way, but Pacey insists they did, and over her mild objections, he escapes her clutches. For now, I'm afraid I don't see Audrey getting that job back, so maybe go grovel and see if you can be a tour guide again.
Oh, God, this whole thing is just like, they were fine. They were fine. You did not have to do this. Just, all right. If it means that the restaurant nonsense with Pacey is ending, sadly, I know what replaces it. And it's even worse, but
it is.
Let's just get through this.
Finally, we have our A plot. Charlie arrives at his off ramp, but Joey has to help him find it. Audrey trudges exhaustedly up to her dorm room, but when she sees a scrunchie on the doorknob, she smiles and takes off. She might not if she knew what was actually going on inside, which is Joey sleeping and Charlie lying next to her on top of the covers, fully clothed like his jeans are on, not even just he's in his boxers. They boringly flirt about whether he saw a puddle of drool on her pillow or if she heard him moan in his sleep about his mother taking his Barbies away until she says what she likes best about whatever they're doing. He doesn't know how she got a scar on her elbow or who her sixth grade teacher was because he hasn't known her all his life and thus isn't burdened by 18 years of expectations about what she's going to be like and vice versa. All she knows about him is that he used to play with Barbies. He grudgingly admits that he did, but claims it's because Barbie looked hot naked, which tells us a lot about what he's into now. None of it good.
No.
They chastely pillow fight into the opening credits without our actually finding out if they are among Boston area college students who fucked.
I'm pretty sure they're not, but thank you for that.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you were wondering what the fallout was of Jen finding out that Joey and Charlie were getting together, you won't. Jen's not in this episode. Like we said, she's not even mentioned. Neither is Jack. So, as we said, TBD and all that. Thank you. Some other day, Joey is bouncing brawlessly out of a class. You can see this in the visual aids when Charlie intercepts her with amazing news about a local Go-Go's tribute band. Clip 14.
There are people who actually want to relive the Go-Go's?
Yeah, sure, of course. I mean, the Go-Go's rocked in their time, of course.
You're both LVP just for that shit.
Oh,
get
my God.
Get that name out of your mouth.
Seriously. Hateful. Jesus. But the news is that a guy in Charlie's band is dating the drummer in this Go-Go's tribute band. So now the Go-Go Wish ones want aggressive mediocrity to go on tour with them. Joey's excited for him to spend a summer doing that, but it would actually be now. Charlie would take some incompletes and make it up the classes later unless they hit it big. Sweetie, you are post-Snapster. Making it big doesn't mean what it used to. Also, you're a cover band, so no. Joey, seeming sincerely happy for Charlie, beams that it sounds like he has it all figured out, but Charlie was actually also thinking that Joey could come with him, apparently not to sing, because he doesn't bring that up at all.
Yeah. Thank
Notable.
God.
Joey scoffs that she couldn't drop out of Worthington. She loves it there. Charlie says it just took so long for Joey to take him seriously, and now that they're just getting started, he doesn't want it to end. Joey asks if he's leaving immediately, and when he says no, she smiles that it's not over yet. Over to the dorm room, Joey has apparently just finished telling Audrey the story of the previous scene, including that Joey would be going on tour only as Charlie's girlfriend. Both girls have a fond laugh at the puppy lovish delusions of someone who was a determined fuckboy until about two episodes ago. Audrey says, it sounds nice that Charlie wants to spend every minute together until he has to leave, which is when Joey gets stressed about the many levels their relationship has skipped, adding something that happened off screen, I guess, that he started talking about staying and called them an us. And Audrey says that if Charlie really isn't going to stay, then Joey's overreacting. The worst thing that could happen is probably that Joey will hurt his feelings a little. And when Audrey walks out, Charlie walks in and Joey fidgets nervously on the bed in a way that he should notice and doesn't. And then I don't know where we are because Joey's spending what she hopes are their last few hours together lying on her bed reading Descartes while Charlie manically flips through an issue of Electronic Musician magazine. So if her goal is to bore him onto the tour without her, good job. Charlie asks if Joey is coming to the show tonight, and she says she wouldn't miss his farewell to Boston. Charlie tosses the magazine and announces that he doesn't think he handled things well this morning when he told her about the tour. Relieved, Joey says it was a little awkward, and he barrels forward, saying now he doesn't think he should go, and Joey reacts like this is a brand new wrinkle and not something she already reported to Audrey in the previous scene. So I don't know if we're out of order or what. Charlie goes on about how important college is and that he'll get other chances and the two of them can start a band. When Joey tries to offer an opinion, he cuts her off by kissing her. She still says she doesn't think this antecedent unclear is a good idea anymore. Charlie knows she has doubts about him, and she should, but he can prove he can be a person of substance. She tries to tell him it's not about that either, but he shuts her up with another kiss, and she gives up and then says they're going to be great together, and he knows this is the right decision, and then runs out telling her they'll talk more later. This is also stupid. So stupid.
What? Like, I mean, why do you need to be a person of substance? Isn't that the whole attraction for her is that you aren't and she doesn't have to take you seriously?
Right.
And also, well, I'm going to stay and all of this is going to work out and there's an us. Then it's like, all right, well, then just fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Stay in the room and do the reason that you're staying because it's not her compelling personality.
No.
This is someone who announced earlier in the episode, this is my life, Worthington College. Yeah. This just has taken forever, and there's still like half an episode of his flipping back and forth sitcom-y bullshit to go. Ugh.
It's bad. Back in her dorm room after getting fired from the restaurant, Audrey's day gets worse as she has to listen to Joey whining through the latest phase of her agita with Charlie instead of even acknowledging that Audrey just went through some shit today. Once she's confirmed that Audrey will come with her to the show tonight to make it seem less like a date, clip 15.
It's official. I'm a horrible person.
You are so not a horrible person.
I am. I'm the worst kind of person because I suck these boys into my web and then I make them give up their dreams until they're left sad and dreamless and living in Boston.
All right. Boston taking strays.
You lost me, but then you had me. I mean, also, like, she sucks, but the show has no idea why.
Yeah.
Like, it's not for this reason. She's mm-hmm. not, like, Venus flytrap. Mm-hmm. She's just an over-sainted drip that yep. should not really be at the center of the show, and the show can never seem to figure out who it should be following.
Yep. I mean, in this scene, she's a horrible person for making this entire conversation about herself and not like, well, it sucks that you got fired. Do you want to look at want ads? Do you want to go get drunk? Whatever. Like, that's mm-hmm. what makes you a horrible person.
Do you want to not listen to me or Charlie sing? Great.
Yeah.
I could be a friend to so many people with that strat.
By the way, Audrey is lying with her head half off the bed. So the episode director, Robert Duncan McNeil, who we know as the space slug of the infamous Voyager episode, has made Audrey's POV of Joey upside down as a style choice, which I don't hate. It's kind of cute.
I mean, you got to make your own fun in season 5. And True. He did. Good for him.
Audrey asks, what about Joey's dreams? And Joey says she has it. She's at Worthington. And I might say that's enough when you're 18, but Audrey tells her to dream bigger. By the way, what are Audrey's dreams? What's she even studying? We don't know. We have never heard about any of her classes as far as I can remember.
Mm-mm.
Audrey tells Joey she should have told Charlie to go on the tour. And Joey says she tried, but he left. And Audrey correctly assumes Joey was too dickmatized to be frank. I mean, as dickmatized as you can be if you're not actually fucking. Joey doesn't know how to tell him she's not that into him or ready to be anyone's girlfriend or for him to change his life and become a person of substance, whereupon Audrey gives up and says this is all worse than she imagined. And then we're at the club. Joey is doing like beside Audrey singing along to the aggressive mediocrity cover of I Want to Be Sedated. Then she goes from puffing out her cheeks with a defeated exhale to smiling adorably and seemingly sincerely at Charlie when he catches her eye from the stage in what I assume is Katie Holmes, like, actually being kind of into Chad Michael Murray and forgetting, like, where her character's supposed to be with regard to his character.
Yeah, could be. But we get the tongue again, so yeah, either way, I don't care for it.
No. Audrey and Joey make it to a table where Joey whines that she can't even have a fling properly. As bored by this as we are, Audrey tells her to just break Charlie's heart and get him on the tour bus already. It's not like Joey hasn't done it to someone before, but Joey bleats that she's never done it intentionally. And when Pacey shows up and gets through the civilization business we've already discussed, Audrey and Joey catch him up on the Charlie situation and the bad decisions he's making because he's so smitten with Joey. When Pacey says he can't blame Charlie, Audrey gets an idea. So when Charlie sits down with him and says he's officially no longer a member of aggressive mediocrity, cool move doing it hours before they were supposed to leave for this tour, making them scramble for a new whatever he is. Audrey says she will no longer be made a fool of. Clip 16.
And you call yourself my friend?
I am.
Well, then, maybe you would like to explain to me why you have been sleeping with my boyfriend for the past 3 months.
What?
Hey, silence! Nobody cares what you have to say. This is between me and Bambi Eyes over here. Although I'm sure that Charlie probably has an opinion on the subject. Not that you care what he thinks.
I care.
Okay, look, please, can somebody tell me what's going on here?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, tell them, homewrecker. Tell them how you still have certain feelings for Pacey. And now that you see the two of us together, you realize what a fantastic male specimen he is.
I wouldn't go that far, but...
Yes! Yes, you would! In fact, if you had to, you would fight me for him!
I would.
It really is.
This is so dumb, but I salute Busy Phillips's commitment to trying to get this to go, and it almost does.
Mm-hmm. Almost, but not quite. Audrey...
No, not quite.
...gets up and smacks Joey, calling her a slut, which somehow activates the hijinks center of Joey's brain, setting off a slap fight until the guys pull them up apart. Charlie says Audrey needs medication, and Pacey wearily says, actually, they're both crazy. Charlie asks if this is an elaborate private joke or something, and Pacey fills time monologuing. Lucy and Ethel are invoked before Joey says she's fine and they can go. And Charlie has confirmed she and Pacey are not getting back together. Joey admits that what he just saw was intended to convince him that he should go on the tour and that if he was planning to stay for Joey, he shouldn't. Charlie says that's a long way to go just to break up with him, but Joey doesn't think anything else would have worked. And in her defense, she did try less histrionic approaches, which he just kissed her through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
She asks whether if she weren't in the picture, he would have hesitated about the tour for a second. And of course, he wouldn't. So she guesses he is starting to get her point. This doesn't feel good to Charlie. And Joey says missing the best opportunity of his life because some girl asked him to wouldn't feel good either. Charlie points out that she didn't ask him to, and when Joey just blinks, he departs. And the next morning, Joey and Audrey are awakened early by the sounds of an acoustic performance of I Want You to Want Me by Charlie on the lawn outside. They make a bunch of jokes about how bad his singing and guitar playing are, but he sounds fine. He's like low energy, but he's no Joey.
Yeah, he sounded fine. I'm concerned for his safety if it's this early in the morning on a college campus, as they say, but... Mm-hmm.
Audrey thinks he's being very cute and romantic. Joey pretends not to be moved, but when Audrey tells Joey to go out to him, she does. And after some banter about him busking to cover expenses for the tour, Joey says she's glad he's going. He may never be as smart as she is, but he will be a person of substance, and when he is, he may come looking for her. And again... Her nose wrinklingly hard smile as she says she would like that suggests to me Katie Holmes might have had a little crush on this one.
Mm-hmm. Or he was so bad that she was thrilled he was finally leaving. Who could say? I might be projecting just a scope.
Joey adds that this was never about him being substantial. It was about him basing a major life decision on a whirlwind romance, if not even, honestly. He goes on about the thrill of the chase, etc., and she's in the middle of saying those things aren't real enough to build a life on when he satisfies the rules of threes and kisses her into silence again. They both had a good time. Not good enough, in my opinion.
No.
He guesses this is when he disappears into the sunset. She says it's the sunrise, kissing him and telling him to take care of himself. That's a series wrap on Chad Michael Murray and his huge jeans, and that's where we leave things. For this week.
Thank God.
Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Not that it's without flaw. Uh-huh. She should have just been like, good, I'll get another job and convince Pacey to quit also. But
yeah,
you gotta give it to Audrey. Nobody else was really even bearable in this episode except sort of Dawson.
Yeah, true. I'll say Dawson for being the best friend in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not counting Audrey, because you already mentioned her. She's certainly a better friend to Joey than Joey deserves. But Dawson is a way better friend to Oliver than Oliver deserves.
Yeah, the only reason I didn't pick Dawson is that he should have, for Oliver's sake and his own, just been like, look, figure it out. Read some Dale Carnegie but we're done here.
Yeah, there were a lot of characters that I had to go and check if we had already seen the end of their arcs after I saw that this was the end for Chad Michael Murray. But both Oliver and Danny will be back this season, so stand by for how else they're going to deploy them. I cannot imagine. Least valuable player. Oliver, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
Corporate? Whoever sent Alex? What's wrong with you? Just shut the fucking restaurant down.
Yeah.
Next time on Again With This, Pacey continues to fail setting a boundary with Alex. Amy continues to fail setting a boundary with either Dawson or problematic director Rex.
Ooh.
And Jack, remember him, deals with the boundaries he failed to set for himself with booze and with Eric in a question mark. We hope you don't have boundaries around the telephone because you need to use yours as a phone. We've got a call-in show coming up. We want to hear from you. Leave us a message, 210-767-2237, with your comments, questions, crackpot theories about any of the shows we've covered, and requests for our next show. You can also send us a note or voice memo by email, hello@againwiththispodcast.com. All that contact info and our visual aids for every episode, including Joey's cape cardigans, are on our website as well, againwiththispodcast.com. I'm dream come true, almost, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Thirst for Vengeance truther Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, kicks serious ass. Talk to you next time.
We don't know how bad this is yet.
Sure we do.